Good afternoon. The time is 2:25. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, January 7th. I'm Ray Graff. For decades, UFOs have been on the fringes of science. Millions saw things they couldn't explain, but with few exceptions, serious academia wouldn't touch the topic with the proverbial 10-foot pole. It all began to change last year when the Pentagon officially acknowledged that Navy footage that was leaked in 2017 was real, and it really captured something unidentified. Now, that doesn't mean it necessarily was aliens flying around, but it means there was something up there the government can't or won't explain. And we'll take a deep dive into UFOs, or UAPs as they call them now, with SUNY physics professor Dr. David Knuth. He is an editor-in-chief, the editor-in-chief of the journal Entropy. He worked for 4 years as a research scientist at the NASA Ames Research Center in Intelligence Systems Division. His current research includes the foundations of physics, inference and inquiry, autonomous robotics, the search for and characterization of extrasolar planets, unidentified aerial phenomena, and that is what we will talk about today. If you have a question, and we always seem to get UFO questions on our astronomy shows, and it's not really an appropriate astronomy question, so if you have a question, give us a call right now, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The most patient man who has now been waiting 200 seconds, but it's been a long time. Dr. Kevin Knuth, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Really great to have you here, and I do appreciate you waiting it out. The press release, or the press conference, was due to start at 1:30. It got a late start. So thank you very much for being here on what is now half of Vox Pop. Let's talk about those Navy videos and what they mean to a physicist. Now, most of us have seen them. They were leaked widely in 2017. The Pentagon said, yeah, they're real. We saw accelerations that were like 100 G's, up to 1,000 G's, no sonic booms, no air disturbance. Is this even possible in the realm of physics?
Well, it's extremely difficult to imagine how an object could be accelerating with those accelerations or moving at those speeds through the air without sonic booms. And so... it's really difficult to know what these objects are, and they are definitely anomalous. The videos showed were basically infrared videos, so they are naturally going to be a bit fuzzy, so they're not going to show the usual optical detail that one would like to have, you know, when looking at a video. but they're certainly anomalous. It's not clear what these things are. The pilots witnessed them and saw them well and described them in the Nimitz case as being shaped like a Tic Tac candy, so or basically a big white flying butane tank, which is very strange. So in the end, you know, and as the pilots described them, they didn't have any flight surfaces. There was no obvious means of propulsion. So these are, and they didn't fly like a normal airplane or helicopter. I think Commander Fravor, who piloted one of the F-18s, who first encountered one of these, described it as bouncing around as if it were a ping pong ball inside of a glass jar. So these things are moving very erratically. Now, of course, the video doesn't show that. I think it seems like they probably, after hearing descriptions from the pilots, it appears that the Navy probably released the most boring videos that they had of these objects.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was going to say, now, in 2004, the Nimitz encounters that you referenced, for those who don't know, they started on radar. This was an advanced radar system that was, I believe, either just being tested or just being fully deployed in the Nimitz group. And this was south of Catalina Island, right? And you're actually going to go there and use satellites and other modern technology. What do you hope to find?
Well, we hope to encounter some of these objects again and actually collect data on them. That's what we hope to do. Senior Chief Day, Kevin Day, who was operating radar on the USS Princeton that was accompanying in the Nimitz battle group, was he was the one who first detected them on radar, and he's basically organized a nonprofit company called UAPX, and we're planning to hire two research vessels and go out to sea for about almost 2 weeks and basically look for these things. So we're going to go out with cameras and video equipment and radar and try to see if we can detect anything or get any information on these objects.
We're joined today by Professor Kevin Knuth of SUNY Albany. He is a physics professor, and he is interested in scientifically studying UFOs, or UAPs, as they are often called by military types and scientists these days. Do you think that the Pentagon, you had mentioned that we got to see perhaps the worst footage that they had. Do you think the Pentagon knows much more about what these actually are than what they're saying?
I think that some people in the government's been, we now know that the government's been studying these things for decades and on and off for decades. So it's likely that somebody knows something, but usually this information's been classified and is highly compartmentalized. So it's probably not widely known or generally known. And that's one of the reasons for the new UAP task force that Congress has put together. And they're trying to collect this information from, you know, the various organizations, government organizations that have been studying it for years. So hopefully, as far as I understand, the Pentagon's supposed to provide a report on everything they know about UAPs in the next 6 months. They'll be providing that to the UAP task force.
I believe that Senator Rubio snuck that in the COVID relief bill, and there was some eyebrow raising about that. People have been looking for UFOs. There have been projects. There have been, over the last 4 or 5 decades, scientists said, okay, we're going to try to take pictures. We're going to set up our gear. We're going to set up our measuring devices, and we're going to try to capture this. And it rarely works out. What makes you think that what you will do at Catalina Island later this year will have a better chance of success?
Well, we're going to try to use satellite imagery to watch the area. We basically have satellite imagery with, you know, constant coverage over that region of ocean. So by acquiring this satellite data and studying it carefully and watching, we should be able to see, you know, if there are any of these objects, they should be detectable. And we hope to basically study where one could best find them. That's the idea. So the first plan is to collect satellite data and to basically map out where these things are more easily located, and then to actually go there with two research vessels and basically sit out there in the ocean and watch for them. So that's in those locations.
We're talking UFOs or UAPs today with Dr. Kevin Knuth of SUNY Albany. Our number here, if you have a question, is 800-348-2551. We got a late start today, but we will get to your calls. 800-348-2551. Kevin, what inspired you to become interested in this? This topic has been something of a scarlet letter among serious scientists for a long time. Why your curiosity?
Well, I think I've always been curious about UFOs ever since I was a young teenager, and, you know, would watch TV programs like In Search Of and things like this in the 1970s. So I've always felt they were interesting. But I think I became much more interested after, I started in graduate school at Montana State University, and in that would have been 1988, the fall of 88. And around that time, I was there for about 2 weeks, and there was a cattle mutilation on a nearby ranch, and it was all over the news, and I'd never heard of anything like this before, so it was kind of freaky.
Yeah.
And the rancher reported, you know, seeing weird lights in the sky, and then there were two of his cows were killed The next day he discovered them. And so several of us in the physics department were sitting around discussing this. We were new students there, and we're in the hallway kind of like, what weird place have we just moved to? You know, cattle who mutilates cows? Oh my God. You know, I'm from Wisconsin. I've heard of cow tipping, but you don't mutilate them. That's horrible. Yeah. So we were discussing this in the hallway, and one of the physics professors came down the hallway to see what we were so animated about. And he said, yeah, it's strange. You know, that happens sometimes, and there's often UFOs involved, but no one ever figures out what really caused the mutilations or who did it. And he said, but what's really strange, he said, is that he said he has friends in the Air Force up at the at Malmstrom Air Force Base, where they have the ICBMs, the nuclear weapons. And he says that they had problems. They've been having problems there with UFOs flying over the nuclear weapon sites and shutting down the missiles. And to be honest, when he walked away, we laughed pretty hard. We thought that's the silliest thing we've ever heard. You know, UFOs are shutting down our nuclear missiles. And so I had heard about this in 1988, and I didn't really think much of it, but it wasn't until I was preparing for an astronomy class that I was teaching around 2015 or so, and I had some students asking questions about UFOs. As you said, a lot of when you have astronomy comes up, a lot of people ask about UFOs. Yeah. Naturally. So I wanted to prepare for that, and I stumbled on a press conference that Robert Hastings had held. And it was some footage on YouTube from CNN, where this press conference where he had several people from the Air Force discussing UFO incursions at nuclear weapon sites. And three of the people were from Malmstrom Air Force Base, the same Air Force Base that I had heard the story about. And I thought, oh my God, these people were from talking about events in the 1960s. And I had heard about this as if it was going on in the 1980s.
Right.
So I thought, well, this can't just be made up. There's got to be something to this. This is strange. And if there's really an incursion on a nuclear missile site, you'd think the government would care about that, right? I can't just fly a drone over a nuclear weapon site and expect to get away with it.
Okay, and that's a great point, and that's one that I have often thought about. Now, doesn't that then infer that, in fact, the government or the military, they know what it is?
Either they know what it is, or it's something they can't do anything about. And so it's not clear what the situation is. They've not come out and discussed this, you know, fully yet. So we don't know. We don't really know what the situation is.
You know,
so there's something that, you know, when they talk about to the naval pilots, the naval pilots say, we can't even chase these things. These things are too fast. There's nothing we can do about them. So they.
Yeah. You know, speculation is tough for a scientist, I am sure. But before we take the break, I will flat out ask, you don't have to answer, what is your opinion? What is at play in the leaked Navy footage? What are we dealing with here? And then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones.
Well, I analyzed the – I looked at very closely at the Nimitz footage from 2004. And in the last few seconds of that footage, the UFO takes off to the left, and the targeting system loses track.
Yes.
And now that those targeting systems are designed to handle missiles, which can accelerate, you know, at, you know, up to 30 G or something like this and still maneuver. So that object had to be accelerating much faster than that. And so I was very interested in that. And we were lucky because it's like 35 frames or so of the video. The plane is in just heading straight, not turning, not moving. The camera's not moving, so we could actually estimate the acceleration of the UAP in that case. And when we did that, we found that the object accelerated at about 75 Gs, which is really crazy. That's a very high acceleration. It's 75 times the acceleration of gravity. So our fighter jets can only handle about 13 Gs before the wings get ripped off. So this is really pretty dramatic. And it doesn't look that impressive on the video, but I was pleased to see that it was a high acceleration. It was much higher than the targeting system could have handled. So it's not surprising that it lost track. So whatever the object was, it was flying ahead of the airplane, ahead of the F-18. The F-18's going about 256 knots or something like this, which is, 280 miles an hour or something like that. So whatever this thing is, it's flying at 280 miles an hour and then accelerates off to the left and away at about 75 times the acceleration of gravity, which is not something a human can handle, and most of our equipment wouldn't be able to handle that either. So it's certainly anomalous. The pilots described them as craft. They looked like craft to the pilots, and so I suspect that they probably are actually craft. I mean, that's what we assumed in one of the papers that we wrote.
Okay, but and we'll take the break here, but are they craft from this planet?
That's the hard one. If they're craft from this planet, that means somebody has really leapfrogged in technology, in aerospace technology, to the point where the rest of the world couldn't possibly keep up. Anybody who has that technology could easily dominate in a war type situation. So we would really, if this was Russian or Chinese, we should be really worried. And you would expect that the military would be much more concerned about that. I suspect that it's probably not that, for several reasons. One is that UFOs have been, the same types of sightings that you get from the Navy guys, you've got reports going back into the late 1800s and earlier. And they're almost, some of the reports are very, very similar. So these objects have been seen by people, for well over 100 years. So it's a, it's hard to imagine that they're from here.
Let's take a quick break. Dr. Kevin Knuth is with us today from SUNY Albany, and we'll get to your calls in a moment here. It's UAPs, UFOs, whatever you want to call them, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Dr. Kevin Knuth. We talk UFOs. The number is 800-348-2551, and we'll get to the phone calls in a minute. Kevin, just like you, since the 70s, I have been following this stuff. And I when I was a kid, I watched In Search Of and everything else. And it always surprises me the twists and turns things take. Now, we got an email here from Luke, and I saw this news item that he refers to. He says, please discuss Israel's space program claims of an alien space federation. And this was widely reported in mainstream news. What do you think about that?
I don't know what to make of that. That was pretty shocking to me. And some of that was reported in a So that was reported recently.
Yeah, it was on NBC News and in mainstream papers and everything else.
I think what surprised me most about that was that you have a government official from Israel seem to know more about top secret activities in the U.S. than many of U.S. officials do. So I thought that was a little odd, and I'm not sure what to make of it. It's very similar to the claims made by the former Canadian defense minister. I forget his name, but he claimed that there are a number of alien species visiting Earth and this. And so I'm not sure.
Yeah,
it's not clear what's known, and it's not clear what's real and what's not. And, there's a lot of information there, but there's also misinformation and disinformation that's been released through the years. So it's very hard to
It's hard to sift through. Exactly. And that's the crazy thing about it. It's you wonder, okay, if this person from a formerly high position is making something up, to what end? Why? And that is what I can never can't figure it out. All right, Kevin Knuth is with us. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Anonymous, I don't like that on my show. I like to have a name. Make up a name. You're on.
Okay. Please bear with me.
Okay.
I had one of the most unbelievable experiences in my life. I believe it would be considered the first contact.
All right. Well, you got about 45 seconds.
So. And basically, on my way back home, at one particular point at the time, I ended up finding myself with a group of people that I'd never seen before. Yeah. And what I did is I backed off. Eventually, when I recovered from the state I was in, I came across one of the most amazing technologies I ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
This machine was about a story and a half to two stories high, 300 feet long. And as it turned out, when I examined it as thoroughly as I could, it was hovering off the ground. It was not contacting the ground like props or anything like that. There was a ramp in the back.
Yeah.
And I was planning to go home before I approached it. And at the end of the ramp, there was someone on the other side. I could not see them, you know, because of the fact it was pretty much silhouetted. I was asked in English if I was coming or not, which I told them, no, I'm not.
Okay.
And what happened was the next day, I mean, because I couldn't figure out to any extent what had happened the night before. And I figured I better get out and get myself some breakfast.
Okay.
And what happened was that a party approached me of the likes I'd never seen before.
All right.
And in the midst of my questioning her, she identified herself as Altarian. Okay. And we had a particular conversation. And then from there, I shook her hand and asked her to go into one of the local establishments.
Okay.
And because of what I experienced the night before, I went up to the area where she told me she came to that location from.
Yeah.
And I went looking. I basically looked to see if the technology I'd seen the night before was still at the ground level. It wasn't. It turned out it was in the air.
Okay. Interesting. It was hovering.
It did a maneuver.
All right.
It did a maneuver 180 degrees into the opposite horizon.
All right.
And left that area in astonishing speed. Now,
okay, I'm going to stop you there. Do you have we have so many callers. Do you have a question for Dr.
Please bear with me.
No, I can't. The show's almost over. It was half length. Let's go to Joanne in Ticonderoga. Joanne.
Yeah, when I was living in Northern California near VLA Air Force Base in the mid-70s, we had a really strange experience. We were standing by our barn one night, and a large cloud came out of the swamp across the road and just floated across the field over the heads of our horses. The horses just kept grazing. And just as this cloud got opposite us, it turned sideways and stopped. It was like 20 or 30 feet in the air. And it was looked like a cup and saucer laying on the side when it turned towards us.
Hmm.
And then it turned back again and slowly went up the field. Then the next day, it was reported in the paper that there were various sightings along the way towards from our place towards Marysville, which was near Beale Air Force Base.
Interesting.
And it was, I thought it was just some sort of a experiment from the Air Force Base, some sort of a bouncy looking air cloud or something. I don't know what it was, but it was reported in the paper and seen by a series of people, you know, along the way as it proceeded north.
Interesting.
It wasn't anything, you know, shooting through the sky, but it was this thing about 20 feet off the ground that looked you know, a sort of a, like an English muffin shape as it came towards us. And then, you know, turned towards us, stopped, and then went forward.
Interesting. Dr. Knuth, you must get reports like this all the time now that it is fairly well known that you are interested in this sort of thing.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, what do you make? What scientific data can you glean from an anecdotal report like Joanne just gave us?
Oh, that's the hard thing. We have a little saying that, well, we call it anecdata, and it's not really, if it's anecdotal, it's not really data.
Yeah.
I've had, you know, it's better, you know, if I have photographs, that's helpful. Videos are great. But even with those, it's hard to tell very often what these things are. I've had numerous people write me letters and send me pictures of literally just lights in the sky, and they ask what are these, and it's hard, but the best I can say is it looks like a light in the sky. I can't tell you what the light's attached to, but there's a light attached to something in the sky. That's all I can tell you.
Right.
And it's very difficult, and it's frustrating. You know, a lot of people are encountering these things or experiencing these things, and they don't always think immediately to take out their cell phone and try to get a picture. And there's not a lot of time, and there's not a lot of time to get a good picture, and it's very difficult to get a good picture with a cell phone. I've challenged a colleague of mine to get a photo, good photo of a jet airplane landing here in Albany, you know, just by going about your daily business. And I said, you got 24 hours to send me a good photo from your cell phone of a jet airplane. And he had trouble doing it.
Yeah. So you make a great point.
It's hard to remember I got to get my cell phone out. And then you've got to flip over to the camera and then try to get a picture. And the plane's moving and you're usually doing something. And it's hard to do.
You know,
go
ahead.
I myself, last night, I realized it was garbage night, and I was taking the garbage out quite late. And as I was taking the garbage out, I saw this bright light approaching from the west, and I realized it wasn't an airplane. And I stared at that for a good 10 seconds or so before I thought, maybe I should get a picture of this with my cell phone. And I finally got my cell phone out to try to get a picture, but the light wasn't bright enough to really show up.
Yeah.
And I watched and I thought, it looks like a satellite. And then I thought, maybe it's the space station. So then I went and checked, and it was indeed the space station. So it was the ISS flying over.
You know, it's very interesting. You mentioned capturing a picture of a landing aircraft. The thing that amazes me is the fact that memory changes over time, and the fact that you may see something and 5 years later you swear to God it was something that you didn't see. And so memory is fallible.
Right.
And the problem that I have is everyone's got a camera nowadays, but there is very little that you can get out of them. In other words, I see all kinds of crazy stuff in the sky, too. We're always out having a fire pit and watching the sky. Hey, I got a light in the sky with no reference points. What good is it?
Right. It's not very good at all. Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's go back. Go ahead.
What you'd really want as a scientist is you'd want a spectrum. You'd actually want it to break it down into the components of the different frequencies of light that are being emitted. That would tell you what kind of light it is, at least.
Is there an app for that?
There was something on Kickstarter a few years ago for a little addition on the phone that you could put on that basically used a CCD. If you reflect light off a CCD, you can get a spectrum.
Yeah.
It acts as what's called a diffraction grating. And so there was an app for that
for
a while, but I think you'd have to carry that around with you all the time, which would be rather clunky.
Well, you know, we only have about 2.5 minutes. And again, I'm a little irritated we didn't get a full show here. So I hope you come back at another time. But let's go to Scott in Massachusetts. Scott, you're up.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Hello.
How's it going? Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Knuth, I'm friends with you. I've interacted with you a little bit on Facebook. I'm also friends with Kevin. And I run a group on Facebook that's been hunting and researching UAP for about 30 years. But my question is, when you take this expedition out there, will you make this information available to the public?
Yes, definitely. That's the plan. The plan is to collect any data we can, and then what we're going to do is write scientific papers to be sent to journals for peer review and to publish the data so that it's available to other scientists and it's been reviewed by our peers so that it's all on the up and up scientifically. That's the idea.
Is there a website that people can find out more about that?
Yes. And I think it's uaPexpedition.org, mm-hmm. I think is what it is. Let me double check here. uaPexpedition.org.
Okay. When are you going to Catalina?
Well, that's a good question. We had originally planned to go this last December. However, the pandemic put that on hold.
Yeah.
So we are probably going to go. It'll be sometime in the next year. So I would expect either, you know, probably the fall of next year sometime.
All right, last question here. We only have about 30 seconds. The videos that you have seen from the Navy and others, are they within the realm of physics as you know them?
The only one where we could really estimate some physical parameters from was the 2004 Nimitz video. At the end of that video, as I mentioned, when the craft accelerates away to the left. And in that case, the object's accelerating at 75 Gs of acceleration, which is really pretty unreasonable. There's no obvious propellant coming out of it. There's no heat signature. You know, it's the thing, you know, if it were a missile, you'd have a rocket engine on the back, right? And that thing would be spraying out hot exhaust, and it's an infrared video, so you'd see this on the infrared video. But the craft doesn't change. Nothing about the craft seems to change as it accelerates away. So it's not clear how it's being propelled. Mm. And it's accelerating at an unreasonable acceleration. So it's...
Mm. Well, this has been so much fun for me. And I do hope you come back, maybe post-Catalina or maybe before. We'll see if you ever get out there. Maybe this pandemic...
Sure, I would love to. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you here, Dr. Kevin Knuth. Support comes from the Center for Disability Services, thanking their staff who are working to help people with their life skills during these challenging times. cfdsny.org/careers for information about helping others. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting Pine Bush Perspectives, a juried photo exhibit open now through February as a story walk along the trail behind the Discovery Center, albanypinebush.org. Once again, thanks to Kevin Knuth for joining us today. Thank you for sticking around, and thank you for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Our producer, Jackie Orchard, Jordan Yuxall took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we bake with our pal, Gail Sokol. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.